first I wanted to say thank you for the postcard. It was very nice and supportive, but it will not affect grading. So last time we discussed we ended last lecture with the Noether theorem, since we want to understand how much constraints can we get on the curvation functions of our quantum field theory because of conformal symmetry in two dimensions, which is a big symmetry. So today we will discuss conformal symmetry on quantum level. In particular, almost synonym to this is word identities. Which play the same role on quantum level, which Noether theorem plays on classical level. So basically we will repeat the same which we have done at the end of the last lecture for the action, we will repeat this for the path integral. So imagine that we have some partition function. Let's take correlation function 1 over z. Where x is some string of local fields. Let's say we can imagine this is some phi 1 of x1, phi n of xn. And now we can think that the symmetry is some change of variables in a path integral, which doesn't change the form of the integral. As we can think about symmetry for finite dimensional integrals. So let's say we now replace integration variable phi to phi tilde of x, which is phi of x, minus I omega of x, j phi. Notice that as in the last lecture, I again assume that however the symmetry is symmetry for constant omega, I make omega to be non-constant, but still I can do this change of variables in a path integral. So for the changed variables, this correlation function becomes 1 over z integral d phi tilde, and here it would be some x plus delta x, because fields are changed. And here I have exponent of minus s of phi. Yes, so basically I just changed the variable, and here I used Noether theorem as we discussed last time. So again, because we have action here, we have conserved current here. Now expanding in omega, assuming that omega is small, and assuming that d phi tilde equals to d phi, we get identity. Yeah, so basically I just expanded the expression. Yeah, notice that here I have omega a of xi. It's because like this, my fields are inserted at points x1 dot 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 xn. And when I apply transformations to these local fields, I also have omega at the same points here. And here gi on x means that typically our generators of the symmetry are some differential operators. So we consider this correlator as some function of x1, xn. And this is like a differential operator acting on this function from outside. Now we can improve this expression. And to improve the expression, we can notice that this can be rewritten using delta functions. Since omega is arbitrary, basically we didn't impose any restrictions here on omega, it's just any function. And this should be equality for any omega. We can just say that the things which are under integral should be the same, just the same at any point, pointwise. So this gives us basically word identity. So it looks a bit like Noether's theorem. So if we forget about the right hand side, it says us that basically divergence of conserved current under any correlation function with any string of fields is zero, basically. So it's kind of conservation of charge on the operator level, but when we have some insertions of fields, when x is non-trivial, we see that there are some contact terms on the right-hand side. So basically, it's like still conservation of current, but outside of points where we have insertions of fields. At these points, we have some extra terms. And the perspective, which will be very useful for us in the following, and we will be back to this perspective many times during the course, is that conserved current is basically generator of the symmetry. So when like divergence of conserved current is around some field, some location of field xi, we have generator of the symmetry acting on the same field on the right hand side. And we will see it in a more transparent way in the following. Okay, so one corollary of this thing, we can basically take integral of this expression over all the whole space-time over x. So it's like corollary. We can take integral ddx again. Or we can assume like in a previous form, we can assume that omega is kind of constant. It's just the same everywhere. Also assume that this correlation function, it decreases when x goes to infinity. Oh, sorry. It will give... so this is zero. Because on the right-hand side, we still like integral will pick up delta functions again, and on the left-hand side, we have zero. And this is, you can recall the expression which we used, equations which we used to constrain 2 and 3 point correlation functions on a tutorial. And basically, this is infinitesimal version of those expressions which we had back then. So we don't have, if we integrate over the whole space-time, we don't have a conserved current any longer, but we just have some generators of symmetry acting on a correlation function. Okay, questions about this? Okay, then...
So the form of the word identities as written there, that's ambiguous up to total derivatives, right?
Why?
Because of the derivation is that equality is inequality under the integral sign.
Is this?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it's ambiguous up to total derivatives.
But we had some expression, so basically we said that we have like omega of x times some f of x ddx equals to zero for any omega, if and only if f of x equals to zero. If you add to f some total derivative, the equation will change. So I don't think we have ambiguity here. Okay. Front, I guess. So now apply this to conformal symmetry. So we have change of coordinates z tilde equals to z plus epsilon of z. This is most general infinitesimal conformal transformation in 2D. And corresponding current J mu is T mu nu epsilon nu. Okay, so also notice that, we have anti-holomorphic coordinate change. And here, when I write epsilon nu, I have two components. I have holomorphic and I have anti-holomorphic component. You can ask me why this is the expression, why it looks like that. I thought a bit about that, and there are some derivations, but probably I would just prefer to illustrate it in the following way. So let's take divergence of this current. And we can rewrite it in the following way. This expansion which I'm writing, it's specific for two dimensions. It would not work in other dimensions. We can decompose the divergence of a current as three terms. And it's very easy to recognize here divergence of current corresponding to translations. Local translations. This term corresponds to local dilatations. And this corresponds to local rotations. In a sense, as we discussed last, two times ago probably, about transformations of a primary field. No, it was last time. We discussed transformations of primary fields that like we have like quasi-primary, which are like invariant under global transformations, global rotations, translations, and dilatations. And we had like primary, real primary fields, which are invariant under local transformations as well. In the same way, this current, it's like a current for global transformations, but made local. So this epsilon can be non-constant. It's some like local factor which can vary over the plane. Yeah, so using this current and all... yes.
The last, should that be, is that a Levi-Civita next to T?
It's epsilon. Yes, it's Levi-Civita, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, if T... Mm-hmm.
You use like bar epsilon for Levi-Civita, right? So just to be confused, so the epsilon...
Oh, sorry, yes, you're right. Yes. Sorry.
No, it's fine. Yeah. Okay.
It's like this. Do you mean this? Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So T mu nu is not a symmetric.
Huh?
T mu nu is not a symmetric.
Yeah, if it's symmetric, then yeah, then these terms they are just vanished identically. But in two dimensions, like on a quantum level, we cannot always assume that it's symmetric and traces. On a classical level, in some cases, there is a way to make it so, but also there is no like general proof in two dimensions that we can make it traces always. Yeah, so this is like one kind of motivation, and another formula which we will need in derivation is a Stokes theorem. In complex coordinates. So yeah, it's basically the same old good Stokes theorem when we have integral or d2x over sigma of divergence of some current. We can rewrite it as a integral over the boundary. Yeah, and in two dimensions, this normal vector using Levi-Civita symbol, it can be written as integral over tangential vector to surface. Yeah, and now, yeah, in complex coordinates, this means yeah, so notice that we are integrating anti-holomorphic component of the vector over holomorphic differential, and we are integrating holomorphic component of the vector over anti-holomorphic coordinate, which might be counterintuitive. So now the corresponding word identity. It's like this, and on the left hand side we have variations of our fields under the conformal transformations, and for example for primary fields we discussed it last time, so there is like epsilon and there is derivative of epsilon for primary fields, and today we will see Yeah, today we will see another example how fields can transform under conformal transformations, not primary fields. Now applying Stokes' theorem, okay, so sine is minus dz times t z bar z x minus yeah, so basically I just written down sum over O over both indices of T. Okay, so now we have different kinds of terms, and probably you remember that we discussed that in homomorphic coordinates metric it's like it's not anti-symmetric, but it's like it's not diagonal. It's like this. So it only has component t eta z z bar or eta z bar z, but there is no diagonal component. Therefore, a trace of stress energy tensor. I don't know. It's proportional, it's like sum of z z bar plus t z bar z. And if it comes to non-symmetric part, which corresponds to like rotations, it's proportional difference of these two. So now we will use kind of trick that, or it was discussed by Jaume, that like on the classical level we assume that we can make stress energy tensor to be traceless and symmetric. So on the classical level these two expressions are vanishing. On the quantum level, we cannot always do that like under correlation functions, but the thing which we can guarantee is that T Z Z bar, like a correlation function of T Z Z bar with any local fields X is proportional to some sum over delta functions. So this is some like finite sum. Here we have some derivatives of delta functions, Z minus Z I. Times some probably differential operators acting on our string of fields. And the same for another component, z bar z. So we will use assumption that when under correlation function we have some part of stress energy tensor which corresponds to a diagonal or non-symmetric part of stress energy tensor, it cannot give us any non-local correlation functions with any other fields. So it's kind of like it's equivalent to statement that we can make things traceless, make stress energy tensor traceless and symmetric on a classical level. It's kind of empirical assumption, but apparently it works in most cases if you make computations for particular series. Okay. So why do we need this assumption? We need this assumption because now in a word identity we have four terms, and in particular we have this term and this term. And since these terms are proportional to some like linear combinations of delta functions and Zura.
I have one question. So,
yeah.
So the way we defined like CT was like okay, because it's like compound symmetry, but like now from this and not from Xiaomi said, the classical description doesn't really go to quantum description. So like how can we view definition of CT and quantum level? Because I thought that like not I thought but like so on classical level, mu mu zero, we require that, right? To have complement symmetry. It was if and only if.
That's not true. So like on a classical level, we can make under some mild assumptions, temu mu to be zero on a classical level in dimensions higher than two.
Yes.
In dimension two, as far as I know, there is no general proof that temu mu can be made zero for conformal theory. It's not like you can in algorithmic way to write down some improvement term which is making t mu to be traceless.
Okay, like what is CFT?
You can think that this is kind of definition that like traceless and antisymmetric part of a stress energy tensor have only like local OPEs with all, sorry, not local OPEs, but have correlation functions, like local correlation functions with all the other fields, only some boundary terms proportional to delta functions. There are no like non-local correlations between them and any other fields, which means that, yeah, they're almost kind of invisible in correlators. So now since these fields are like have only delta functions type correlation functions with other fields, and this is just contour integral, so it's like some contour, and here we have like some points where we have delta functions. These terms, this term and this term, they're like they can be dropped from the summation because almost never, yeah, this contour, it's not crossing the points where this integral can have any, sorry, where this correlator can have any contributions. So we can write down that d epsilon epsilon bar of correlator is equal to minus 1 over 2 pi I. And here we have like contour integral epsilon of z t of z x and this is like this is often called conformal word identity. Also, you can think the definition of conformal field theory is theory, like where some kind of this identity is satisfied. So basically, this is a starting point for deriving all the constraints on the field. Okay, now, yeah, questions? Any more questions on derivation? Yeah.
Excuse me. What is the manifold M that you're integrating?
For now, I assume that this is just a complex plane. And contour C here is just some contour which encircles all the insertion points of fields. So both Z and fields which we have in string X. Okay, now we remember that for primary fields, so let's apply this for some particular field. So we remember that for primary fields, delta epsilon of phi is equal to minus epsilon d phi plus h d epsilon phi minus epsilon bar d bar phi h bar. Yeah, so for primary fields, as I mentioned today before, we have only like linear and epsilon term, and we have some term which is proportional to derivative of epsilon. Now we can match left-hand side for primary. Imagine that we have only primary fields in a string X. We can plug in this expression to the left-hand side, or some of these expressions for all the fields. And we can match this with the right-hand side. And it's easy to see that these two expressions are consistent when stress energy tensor under curvation function have the following property. So so that basically we can use this expression, we can plug it in here, and then we can take contour integrals over contour C. And this contour integral can pick some residues. So here we have just usual residue, just pole. And this pole will tell us that epsilon of Z becomes epsilon of omega I, given this term for primary fields. And we also have this term where we have 1 over z minus omega squared, and it gives us, when we take contour integral, we need to take derivative of epsilon of z, so this gives us this term. Yeah, and corresponding anti-holomorphic expression gives us anti-holomorphic part. Yeah, and the way to write this expression down, which we will use a lot in the following, and which Jaume also mentioned before, is to say that for primary fields, we have operator product expansion. If we have somewhere under correlation function, stress energy tensor, and some field, some primary field phi in two points, when z is approaching w, yeah, that's correct. This would be equal 1 over z minus w GW phi plus H over Z minus W squared times phi HW plus regular terms. So this is OPE, this is called operator product expansion for stress energy tensor with field phi H. And phi H is primary. Yeah, and this is kind of very important equation. So basically, we derived it from word identity. That we know the singular behavior of stress energy tensor and any primary field. In the following, what we will be doing in most of the following lectures, we will reformulate this kind of OPEs in a language of algebra, in the language of Virasoro algebra and representations of Virasoro algebra. And we will use this reformulation, we will apply it to constrained correlation functions as much as possible. And we will see that basically we can know almost everything about correlation functions just from the knowledge of conformal dimensions of the fields. Questions on this? Yes.
In the second term, in the operator product expansion, should it be Z bar? The second term.
Here.
Yeah.
Here.
The
here.
Yeah.
Z minus W. Yeah,
I was
see.
Wondering if that should be Z bar.
No. It's Z. It's the point. So everything. So it's also important thing that everything is holomorphic here. So we have only like ZW, and here in the denominator we have Z minus W. There is no anti-holomorphic dependence, and that's the reason why we can use residues here. If we had any anti-holomorphic coordinates, we were unable to deform contour because integrals like this technique with residues, it works only for holomorphic integrals. Otherwise, we cannot deform contour arbitrarily. Okay. So now, based on this, we can make a small remark. Global transformations. Correspond to like Z going to F of Z, which we can parameterize like this. It's just convenient parameterization. Which goes when alpha, beta, and gamma are small. This goes to epsilon of Z equal to beta plus 2 alpha z minus gamma z squared. So those are like, this is a infinitesimal version of global transformations, translations, dilatations and rotations, and special conformal transformations. So now we can use this epsilon of z, and we can like use global, this like version of word identity, which we had like zero equals to some I from one to n gi of x. But now for conformal transformations, this gives us some like word identities for global conformal transformations. So those are pretty expected ones. So one is like this. Second one is like this. And third one is this. Plus anti-homomorphic ones. Yeah, so this is a global word identity for translations, this one for rotations and derotations, and this is for special conformal transformations. Yeah, and these are exactly versions of those like word identities which we used to constrain correlation functions on a tutorial. But now we have like a homomorphic and anti-homomorphic version. So as in higher dimensions, definitely in two dimensions, we have constrained expressions for two and three point correlation functions. But notice the difference before when we were talking about two and three point functions, we were assuming that our fields are scalar, that they do not transform untrivially under rotations. And we only constrained correlation functions for scalar fields. Now in two dimensions, it's a bit easier to constrain fields, correlation functions for fields of any spin. Because yes, like rotations and derotations, they're not very much different in two dimensions. So now we have like here conformal dimension, homomorphic conformal dimension, and anti-homomorphic conformal dimension. And in a similar way, we can write down three-point functions. And yeah, we have expressions similar to higher dimensional one, but also modified by homomorphic and anti-homomorphic part. Yeah, so the difference, so if h is equal to h bar, remember that h is one half of delta plus s and h bar is one half of delta minus s. So if spin is equal to zero, if those are scalar fields, then h equal to h bar and we are getting back expressions which we had in higher dimensions. But here, yeah, we have like separately homomorphic and anti-homomorphic parts. Yeah, now you can ask me a question. Any other examples of OPEs? And yeah, the natural candidate is a stress energy tensor itself. So so stress energy tensor its holomorphic part T of Z. It it has spin equals 2. And it has conformal dimension, sorry, scaling dimension equals to 2, just based on dimensions counting. This gives that, like technically, it should be primary field of conformal dimension, conformal dimension 2, and anti-holomorphic conformal dimension equals to 0. But apparently, T of Z is not is not primary. It is quasi-primary. Quasi-primary, which means that under global transformations, it transforms as primary field. But for local transformations, there is some extra term. Probably you remember from Jaume's part of the lectures that even in a in a flat space time where we have average of t equals to zero, or averages of derivatives of t equals to zero, we still have non-vanishing correlation functions of t with itself, which suggests that OPE for t with itself, it cannot be just t over z minus w squared plus times 2 plus dt over z minus w. Because if it was the case, if OPE was like this plus regular terms, then yeah, taking correlation functions of the left hand side and of the right hand side, right hand side would be vanishing because average of this is vanishing. And average of this cannot be vanishing. So OPE is not like that. And actually, OPE gets modified. And the right OPE is T of Z, T of W equals to C over 2 Z minus W to the power of 4 plus 2 T of W Z minus W squared plus dt of w divided by z minus w plus regular terms. So this is OPE of t with itself. Yeah, so as I said, it transforms as quasi-primary, which means that we have these two terms. And if we plug in global conformal transformations as it we have done it above, we can find that this kind of global word identity is there also satisfied for stress energy tensor inserted. But we also have this peculiar term here, which is not very clear what it corresponds to. And we have this here C, and this C is called central charged. And yeah, there is corresponding anti-holomorphic central charge for OPEs of T bar with T bar. Yeah, and this it will be more clear later. Yeah, it will be more clear later why it's called central. but it will be clear when we will go to language of algebra. Yes.
Could I, for example, get like 1/c to the six terms if I was like in a non-unitary theorem, like a
Yeah, so there is, for this kind of APEs, there is a very easy constraint, dimensional constraint. So this field is of dimension 2 and this field of dimension 2. So on the right-hand side, you can get only z minus w to power of 4, but you cannot get 1 over z minus w of to power of 6 because there is no field of dimension minus 2.
Yeah, but if I was in a non-unitary theory, I would have a field like that, so I'm asking like...
Yeah, I mean, I think for stress energy tensor, no, you cannot. For other, yeah, for other fields, some weird things can happen in non-unitary theories, but for stress energy tensor, I don't think so. Yeah, also like there is argument that OPEs of stress energy tensor with itself should only contain stress energy tensor. They are not containing any other fields on the right-hand side. So this is like the only extra term which you can write down is something cubic, like 1 over z minus w cube. But then there is nothing you can also write down of spin 1 to have correct OPEs. Yeah.
Can you maybe repeat how we derived the first term? Like, I see why it has to be here, but I don't see where it came from.
Yeah, so far we haven't derived it. In principle, they might be term like this. So. With some constant C. There might be no term of form 1 of z minus w cubed because it has wrong dimension. These two fields are of dimension 2 and this like term of dimension 3. And we don't have dimension 1 field to put it in the numerator because we only want OPEs of T with T contain only T on the right hand side. So we cannot have this term. And in principle, we can have this term and we will see in concrete examples that we indeed are getting this kind of term for OPEs. For example, for free fields or even for non-free fields, OPE is like that. And this central charge C, it's model dependent. Model dependent, which means that for different theories, value of this central charge C would be different. And we will see this in examples. And it's kind of important invariant of the theory. So from knowledge of this central charge, we can already say something about the theory. For example, if it can be unitary or not. Yeah?
Is there a derivation for this stress tensor OPE or is it an assumption that we make?
So there is some argument which shows that like a correlation function of T of Z times T of W should be some constant divided by Z minus W to power of 4. And it's almost trivial because of dimensional counting, because under dilatations we want left-hand side and right-hand side to transform in the right way. So like what then, like, what do you mean by derivation? So this kind of this is like quasi-primary fields, and for quasi-primary fields, two-point function is like that. And the question is, what is the coefficient here? What is the coefficient here? And yeah, this coefficient is model dependent. Therefore, you have to pick particular model to compute it. So it's kind of general thing. Probably I should not. I started later, so I have 5 more minutes.
So we know generally what is the input data that I start with and what I have to compute in theory.
Depends.
Okay.
Yeah, can you make your question more?
So like if I have like non-Lagrangian theory.
Yeah.
So like, do I assume existence of some fields, and do I assume knowledge of like scaling dimensions?
Yes.
And the output that I want to get is like correlation functions. From like fields and their scaling dimensions, am I usually able to calculate central charge, for example, or is central charge also a parameter?
Yeah, central charge is a part of data. If you start like in axiomatic way, it's part of data. But as we will see in the following, also unitarity is very strong constraint. So apparently, for example, not for any central charges, you have unitary series. So for example, you can have some central charge for which you can prove that there is no unitary CFTs, which is already a very strong constraint. And for some central charges, unitary series are very constrained. You have like discrete number of them. So like in the remaining 5 minutes, what kind of field is T? Or how it transforms. Because I written down OPE, but for primary fields the direction was opposite. We had transformation rule for primary fields under infinitesimal transformations, and we had general word identity. And using transformation rule and word identity, we guessed what is the correct OPE. But now I'm acting in the opposite way. I have some OPE, but I didn't specify what is the transformation rule like this for stress energy tensor. So apparently, we can just again use word identity, but in opposite direction. So what is this? This will have only holomorphic part. And when I write down CW, I mean small circle which surrounds point W. So here I just use my word identity. So on the left-hand side, I have transformation rule for my field. And on the right-hand side, I have this integral with correlation functions. Yeah, and now we can plug in OPE. Yeah, plus some regular terms, but regular terms cannot contribute to this kind of integrals. So just using Cauchy formula for contour integrals in a complex domain, we have this expression. Yeah, I'm finishing. So this we have already seen. There is minus here. This we have already seen. This is transformation rule for primary fields. And this is some extra term of not very clear origin. So now this expression surprisingly can be made global in the same way how we have global version of transformation rules for primary fields. Global means we can use it for non-infinitesimal, it's better not to use global, but non-infinitesimal version of this transformation rule. So this would be dw over dz minus 2. Yeah, so it's like the usual transformation rule times some extra factor, and this object is called Schwarzschild derivative. And yeah, it's some explicit expression. Yeah, so yeah, this is some weird combination of derivatives of yeah, coordinate changes. And yeah, this thing, it satisfies three nice properties. So it has like correct infinitesimal limit when W equals to Z plus epsilon. So in infinitesimal limit, it reproduces this transformation rule for like for primary field plus some extra term with third derivative of epsilon. Another nice property is that it is like this Schwarzschild derivative is vanishing. For global transformations, global I mean when z goes to az plus b divided by cz plus d, which is non-obvious at all. When you see at this expression and you yeah, you assume that you take like third derivative of this kind of expression, it's very non-trivial that it is vanishing, but it is vanishing. So, which means that under global transformation, these transformations, T transforms like a primary, like quasi-primary field. Because if we had some extra here, it meant that T doesn't transform like a quasi-primary field. And third property, which is also important, so this yeah, this Schwarzschild derivative has correct transformation rules for compositions of transformations. So when Z goes to W and W goes to some U, there is like formula which you can check if you want, that uz equals to wz plus dw over du squared times uw. Yeah, which is also nature requirement if you want. So we have like group of conformal transformations. We can take their compositions. And if something transforms under the group, its transformation rule have to be consistent with the group law. And apparently this identity guarantees that T transforms in a good way under conformal mappings. Yeah, so this is this kind of weird object. And yeah, you can do different kind of tricks with this transformation rule, but I'm already over time, so probably I will not show you these tricks. So next lecture, we will discuss more algebra behind these OPEs and behind this, all these transformations, and probably we will consider some examples. Questions? Yeah.
What kind of tricks did you have in mind?
So, yeah, so for example, there is this funny trick. It's not like mathematically justifiable, but you can use mapping from a plane to cylinder. So you can pick W equals to L over 2 pi times logarithm of Z, which is not a nice global transformation because it's like not single valued. So, but you can assume that you're mapping like plane without the cut into some like strip. And yeah, this thing is glued to this thing. And you can use a transformation rule for stress energy tensor, and you can assume that on a plane, average, like since this is like a flat space time, average of stress energy tensor is just zero. Because yeah, in a flat space time, if you insert just one, yeah, I finished, yeah, sorry. It's just a question. Yeah, so this is just zero. And now you can do this as an exercise. So you can try to use this transformation rule for this transformation. And it will give you that on a cylinder, average of stress energy tensor, it's like C over L, as far, no, it's like over L square, I guess. So you have some non-trivial average for stress energy tensor on a cylinder. And this is so-called Casimir energy, because you have like finite circumference of your cylinder, you have some vacuum energy in your theory, which was not present on a plane. And this is vacuum energy, it's like inversely proportional to radius of your cylinder. So the smaller is cylinder, the higher is Casimir energy. But also it's proportional to central charge, which means that like central charge is counting quantum degrees of freedom, which can contribute to Casimir energy. But yeah, it's not like, yeah, it's not fully justifiable, because I promise that we are not going to make global transformations like that, but yeah.